Today's episode of Lighting Up the Marquee is sponsored by Dark Sales Productions. In today's world, video is the best way to share your story. Whether you're looking to market your business or brand on social media, or even share amazing memories like your wedding and other events, Dark Sales Productions is committed to creating the best content and capturing your most precious memories for you. Based in the Chicagoland area, Dark Sales Productions has worked with clients in the past to help market both local businesses and larger brands, capture newlywed's perfect day, produce short films, and even work with individuals looking to have professional photos and headshots taken. No matter the business occasion or individual, Dark Sales Productions is ready to work with you. All you have to do is visit the website darksalesproductions.com to learn more about them, and you can also contact them to get started on your next project. That's DarkSalesProductions.com. And if you go over there and mention that you listened to this ad on Lighting Up the Marquee, they'll hook you up with some special offers. Once again, that's darksalesproductions.com. All you got to do is mention that you listened to this ad on Lighting Up the Marquee, and some special offers will be there waiting for you. Now, let's get started with today's episode.
That was a good one.
Nailed it. Well, we'll just jump right into it. We're not going to waste any more time. We got Arsenio back on Lighting Up the Marquee.
How's it going, everyone? How's it going?
You're always here. Like, you're not physically here. We're on Skype, but you're just always around the show.
Yeah. Either might as well just either on the actually on the show, or like, hey, I got this idea, or like, hey, look what, like, everything that's going on, you know?
Mm-hmm. It might as well just get you like not a director's chair. I don't know what they have for podcasts, but like your like own like setup.
Yeah. A little virtual setup like on the side.
Because I don't know if you've been on the show the most this year out of all the guests, because you've been on this whole year. Like,
I think I told it three times, if I'm not mistaken.
Three times? Let's go back. Let's check the scoreboard.
Oh my gosh.
Let's check the scores. I have you listed at... I think this is your fifth, because the last time you were on was fourth, mm-hmm. I believe.
That's right. Yeah.
So I got one, two, I got you at four, yeah, and this is your fifth.
Look at number five. You're
just constantly here. Yeah, because you came on in January when the world was like somewhat normal.
And then everything changed when the Fire Nation attacked.
And then you've been on like every couple of months to give us a recap.
Yeah, because literally it was like leading up to the move, and then after the move.
Yeah, and even in January we were talking about the Oscars, like before the Oscars.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh man.
Oh my gosh.
Shit's crazy. But now we're
back. We're back in simpler times.
We're back, sort of, I guess.
Jeez.
But now we're back, and it's October. And we're gonna be talking about some spooky stuff, some spooky shows. Yeah. So, well, first off, how have you been? Let's ask that first. How have you been?
I'm doing pretty good. Doing pretty good so far. You know, just living life. Found a job for the interim.
Same.
Still, just, you know, trying to just grind it out and everything. I'm diving into a place I've only been once. It's I made like one audio drama, and that was like in for class. But I had this idea in my head that I was like, I wonder how this would be, and I wonder if anyone would actually listen to it. So It was just,
well, hopefully
it'd just be it'd be kind of interesting. But I was like, I don't know how I can do this. Cause I was like, I could be the voice actor. That's no problem. But it's just like, it's more of like creating the world, and can it like effectively be pulled off? And that's why I keep going back and forth and doing samples. And I'm like, okay, now I need to rework this story or rework this part or whatever, just to make it like work, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, it sounds like similar to like when I write scripts, when I'm trying to write it, but then like I get inside my head too much when I'm writing a script. And I'm just like, oh, that's not going to work. Like, how am I going to film that? That's not going to work. I don't have the budget for this.
But I think the cool thing is about doing an audio drama is that like you don't you can let your mind go on a complete imagination and be okay with it, because everything is suggestion in the audio, in the sound effects, in the, you know, in the dialogue, the direction and everything. So like it can effectively be pulled off. It's just amount of audio design that you throw into it. I think that's why I feel a little bit more free with the audio drama type setting and medium. But because I had so many, I said this at the end of the last time I was on, but like I had a few shorts I wanted to film, but because of this whole pandemic and everything, and if someone got sick, I would feel horrible, you know? And so I'm like, I don't want to have that on me, right, or put anyone else at risk, and just for a stupid movie, you know, or a short that's just going on YouTube, you know? Like, personally, that's not worth it for me. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I'd rather, like, work on a story or work on just something else that can be done safely.
Right, that's like the bummer thing too, is like I want to be filming stuff, but it's like you said, like I don't want to put somebody at risk or like put myself at risk to like potentially get something. Even when I go to work, because I'm working now, it's just like I'm constantly wearing my mask and everything, but it's also like if I get in contact with the wrong person, it's crazy.
The funny thing is that I think it was back in August, like I was on set for a promo shoot for Jaden's new album, and there were times, you know, when we took off our masks to like to eat lunch or, you know, take a gulp of water because it was like over 100 degrees outside. But when I did that, I didn't feel like, oh my gosh, I gotta hurry up because I don't want anyone to, you know. But it's just like everyone was like social distanced, everyone was like very cooperative in the process of it and being safe, that I was like, I don't have anxiety or fear being in this little bubble that I was in for a day, you know? And especially cause they tested us like crazy, you know? And I was like, okay, I guess we're fine, you know? But like outside of that, I was like, okay, who's, you know, it's just, it's little anxiety inducing. Cause I'm like, okay, it's like, do you really social distance? Do you really wear your mask? Or do you just say that, you know? And it's just like, you really don't know.
Yeah, that's like at my job right now, like the break room, they limit it to 4 people at a time. But even when I'm there, or like, and you also got to get temperature checked before every shift. So like, even if you walk in and you have a fever or like 100 degrees, you can't like walk into the store. You have to leave right away and like call somebody and be like, hey, this happened, yada yada. And then, but like with the break room being 4 people, like when I take my breaks in there, sometimes I just go to my car because I want to be by myself, like I want to not deal with anything or be in the store. Like I'll take my mask off to eat and like drink water, and I'll usually be watching, like, ever since the last time you were on, I started Clone Wars, so I'm watching that on my breaks because I can watch an episode in my 30 minutes. But like after I finish eating, sometimes I'll forget to put my mask back on. And it's like you said, like I'm not rushing to put it on, but I'm like, oh, well, like I don't need to have it off anymore. I can just put it back on. It's weird though, but
yeah,
it is what it is, I guess.
Like I think the other day I had a weird relapse because I can't remember where I was. I was going through a drive-thru and I went to give the lady like my card to pay for the food. And she's like, sir, do you have a mask? And I was like, yeah. And didn't even like put it on. And I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. And I was like, let me put that off for you. I'm like, I'm sorry. And then I'm like in my head, I'm like, stupid, why did you do that?
That's like, it's one of those things where it's like, I think that happened to me at a drive-thru or like a car wash. I forgot to put my mask on. So when I pulled up, they were like, can you put your mask on? And I was like, oh, duh. But let's move past all the COVID talk, everything. Let's get to what we're going to talk about today. It is the spooky season.
Yeah, that's right.
And this past weekend, they dropped The Haunting of Bly Manor on Netflix. So we're going to talk about Hill House, which is the season before this, even though they have no connection, like narrative connection.
Right. I think the only connection they have other than the director and creator is
some of the actors.
Because they did bring back some of the actors from Hill House into this one, which was pretty cool. Because, I mean, if you didn't watch Hill House, but you watch this one, it'll be like, oh, okay, cool. It's awesome. You know? But, like, I don't, but I feel like it was almost distracting, just slightly. Because I'm over here like, where do I know them from? What character were they?
Well, know? For me, and then I'm like, well, for me too, is like right. When you see these actors, at least like, probably for like you and me and like other filmmakers we know, or like people that, not filmmakers, but people who are in the know or like been keeping up with it know it has nothing to do with Hill House. But it'd be, I feel like it'd be more jarring for a lot of people who think Bly Manor is like another, like a sequel to Hill House or season two. And it'll be like jarring for them to see these like these actors being different people.
Right, because I think you could almost compare it to something like American Horror Story.
That's what
in a way.
That's what I was gonna
because
say.
Because it's almost like the same characters or same actors, just different characters. And I saw some backlash on Bly Manor, but I think it's because they wanted another like Hill House when it's a completely different
here's
story.
The thing. I was thinking American Horror Story too, but. The thing that's different between American Horror Story and like The Haunting, I'm just gonna call it like The Haunting series, like because it's
right.
The Haunting series is what American Horror Story wants to be, because American Horror Story stopped being scary after the first scene of the first season. Like nothing, everything after that's like I think I stopped after Freak Show, watched some of the other seasons, but none of it was like scary anymore. It was all like soap opera drama, like. Like PG-13, like horror-esque.
Yeah.
It's just Ryan Murphy's style, which I'm not, for me personally, I'm not a big fan of his stuff because everything just seems to be the same. Just slap a different name on it.
I know we're talking about Bly Manor and the Haunting series, but did you see Ratchet?
Because, dude, I've been busy.
Because that one's Ryan Murphy as well. And that one's actually really good.
That's what I've been hearing. I'm going to try to get time to check that out, but. I'm so busy. I had Bly Manor to binge. I had Clone Wars, which I've been watching. Which I mean, Clone Wars doesn't take up a lot of my time. I can knock out a bunch of those episodes. But it's that constant jumping, because I did see what you mean by like certain characters die, and then like if you watched it season one like through, you'd be confused because they show up even though they're dead.
Yeah.
But yeah, I need to watch Ratchet. There's a couple other things I need to watch.
Because the thing with Ratchet, I think, because that one also too got some backlash just because they're like, oh, that's not Nurse Ratchet from like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, but like it's the prequel. It's a setup for that. And Ryan Murphy even said that like this series will end with her at that hospital. And we're only in season one, so you're barely getting to know the person, and then slowly they're gonna remove the humanity from her. And I'm like, that's brilliant, because you wanna be so engrossed with her that you're like that she's a likable character in a way, but slowly I guess as the seasons go on, that's when you begin to almost see the madness that she has in the movie.
It's going like the Breaking Bad method, where Vince Gilligan was like, I want to take the protagonist, and by the end of the series, he'll be the antagonist. So it's something like that, yeah. I'll check it out. Like, it was also one of those things where I saw it, and I kind of was like, why do we need this? It's like a random show for a movie that came out in the 70s that no one, like, people remember it, but...
No, it's honestly, I think it's forgotten. I think it's one of those movies that is,
it's like,
that it's a great movie, but it's easily forgotten. Yeah.
It's one of those movies where it's like so great, but due to the fact that it's like came out in the 70s, not a lot of people watch it anymore. Like I saw it super young too. I think I saw it when I was like 12 or 13 and I liked it, but it's one of those things where it's kind of hard to be like, you got a movie like to recommend to a friend, watch One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. It's entertaining. Even though it's like a super, like, super dramatic.
I mean, it is pretty entertaining.
It is.
Not gonna lie.
But it's also, like, depressing and a little bit. It's just, like, I wouldn't say it's a struggle to get through, but it's, like, there's a lot of intense moments, I guess, that it's not, like, a entertaining ride throughout the whole thing. I don't know. I was seeing people compare Ratchet to American Horror Story, which is, again, being, for me, like, why I don't really like Ryan Murphy stuff is everything, like I said, can be interchanged. But right. he has a fan base, so. And he has a style. I gotta give it to him. He's got a style.
Dude, the style in that show is amazing. The use of colors and, because literally, like, it would go from, like, pastel green to, like, dark red in, like, while she's walking, the lights just, like, change.
I did like that green tone that they used, like, in the... In the still, yeah. like, promotion poster for it. It reminded me of, do you remember mm-hmm. that movie, A Cure for Wellness, with like, Gore Verbinski? Yes. It reminded me of, like, that movie.
Yeah.
If they color corrected the poster and, like, turned the vibrance up a lot. Because that movie's mm-hmm. super bland, in a sense. It's just a very bleak movie. That movie's all right. I think the end. I don't know. We're not going to talk about it. That movie came out like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
But let's get on to the Haunting series.
Bly Manor and the Haunting
series. So let's talk about Hill House for a little bit. We both have seen it. I don't know how well you liked it. I don't think we've talked about it. For me, I really liked Hill House.
I loved Hill House because I think
I was going to say when it came out, I binged it pretty much all in one sitting. So it came out right when I moved to LA, and I was a fan of Flanagan's stuff before, but I binged it, and then people in my semester in LA program were still watching it, or like hadn't started it, so even that same week, mm-hmm. as soon as I finished it, I went and watched it with them, so I could get a second viewing of it right away.
Right,
And to me, Hill House, like, flowed seamlessly. Like, it was, every episode made sense, like, everything built up perfectly. Everything was like solved by the end, or everything was wrapped up by the end. And then for me, I was drawn in right away. And then by the middle of the season, I think was the Bent Neck Lady episode. And then the funeral episode, funeral
Bent Neck Lady episode. Oh my God.
The hooks were like deep in me by then. And I was invested for the rest of the series.
Yeah. The funeral episode was amazing. It's all one take, and I was just blown away. I mean, you could kind of tell where...
Yeah, you could tell, but it's still, like, the choreographing and, like, the acting and the blocking. It was also good.
Yeah, because it really blew my mind. Like, I don't know if it was literally from one set to another, and they just...
That's what I was wondering, too.
Or... Because there were some shots in there, I'm like, no, they are literally going through a corridor and into mm-hmm. the next set. They have to be. Because there's no way you can just cut and make it look that seamless.
Like, elaborate sets, too. I think the thing that also made me more invested in Hill House is mm-hmm. the hidden ghost throughout the series. So, like, when you rewatch it, you're, like, looking for where he, like, planted these ghosts. Because that was what I love so much about it is, like, is Flanagan put these ghosts in, but he was saying they're not the focus, they're in the background, so like they're not, you're not supposed to notice them, but if you do, it adds to that, like, that level of creepiness and atmosphere, which is another reason I respected it so much, was that level of detail is so impressive. It's like things you wouldn't think of, or like things you wouldn't think of as a director being like, let's put a hidden ghost right there. And then this actor will just stand there the whole scene.
Right, and not do anything. And I think that's what really adds to, like you said, the atmosphere and the aesthetic of the show mm-hmm. in general. Because there are so many times where it's just creepy because it's like you feel like someone's staring at you mm-hmm. and then you see them mm-hmm. and then that's all your focus.
And it's not even, some of the ghosts are easier to spot. They're more in your face. But there was a couple where... they're like hiding behind a banister or like a sheet and you just see like an eye. But if you see it, you see it.
Right. Yeah. Or like a hat or something. I love that. That was so cool. I love that.
I think that was what I got from Hill House. I don't know if you have anything more to add about Hill House.
I think it was so well done. And I think it's not only, it was terrifying, but like, not only is it a horror film, mm-hmm. but it's a family drama, and I think that's what Mike Flanagan does really well, is the family drama and making connections. Because mm-hmm. even if you look back to Dr. Sleep, it's mm-hmm. there. Like, Dr. Sleep is almost haunting, you know?
Right.
Of Hill House. Just, of course, maybe, like, different characters and scenarios and everything, but you can see the parallels of, like, one from the
even,
other.
Even the know? Way Dr. Sleep was shot, the cinematography is very similar.
Similar, right.
Similar color palettes, similar shots. That's what I was thinking about, too, after seeing Dr. Sleep, was the parallelism between Hill House and Sleep. And I don't know if it's just because that's Flanagan's style.
I think, I outside of the Haunting series and Dr. Sleep, I don't think I've ever seen any of his other movies. Or maybe I have and I just didn't notice.
He has a deal with Netflix, so I think most of his movies, if not all of them, are there.
Okay.
Like Gerald's Game is a Netflix film, which is great. It's another Stephen King adaptation. He had a movie called Hush with his wife, Kate Siegel.
That's the one where she's deaf, right? And the intruders mm-hmm. go into the house.
And she and him wrote the script.
Oh, okay. I heard so many great things about it, but I haven't seen it because I was like, I don't know if it's just one of these like cheesy whatever nope. things. Okay, I need to check it out then. I didn't know it was him. If I knew it was him, I would watch it a lot sooner.
Yeah, watch that. I think he has another one on Netflix. I don't know if Ouija Origin of Evil is on there, but I haven't seen that one.
I saw the first Ouija, and I was just like, oh, man, here we go. But, like, it's okay. And then...
People said the second one improves the first one.
That's what I've
heard. Not only improves the first one, but it actually is, like, good on its own.
So it's almost like Annabelle Creation in that sense.
Yeah, it's like where the director figured it out, the second movie.
Yeah.
But no, he's got good stuff, and yeah, that's what I was thinking, because I wouldn't expect it to be lazy. Like, he's like, oh, I'm just going to make Dr. Sleep, like, let's, like, pump it out and make it look like Hill House. I don't think that was his intention, or...
No, because I think what came first was Dr. Sleep, and then Hill House came out.
He probably was filming them both like at the same time, or like doing post on one and filming, because he was even saying for Bly Manor, he's on set for something else right now.
Oh, geez.
Like,
wow.
He's constantly just like finishing things and going to the next thing.
Wow. That's crazy.
He's got some good stuff. But I think I will say it up front. I think Hill House is better than Bly Manor. And I have my reasons why I think Hill House is better.
Okay.
That's not to say I didn't enjoy Bly Manor. I do think it was good.
Okay.
But for me, it took longer to get that hook drawn into me for Bly Manor.
Oh, I can see that. Yeah. Because I think I agree, because I remember there was a part where I had to stop after episode 3, and that was the episode, before the dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And the car incident, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
We'll get into spoilers later, but, you know, mm-hmm. just for right now, the non-spoiler, or the spoiler-free.
Yeah, for now, stuff. We'll keep it spoiler-free. We'll get...
Yeah.
We'll announce when spoilers are coming up for Bly Manor and sort of Hill House. I mean, it's been 2 years since Hill House, so...
Yeah. But, for that episode, the kind of, the backstory of, what's her name? At first, I was just like, okay... What is, like, okay, there's so much layers going on, and it just feels like it's all set up, and it's all building and building and building and building, and by episode 4, it keeps building and building and building. I'm just like, okay, where is it gonna, like...
That's how I was. It's like...
I wasn't bored, and it wasn't, like, bad, at least not for me, because I felt like... I felt like, okay, this is... The layers are there... And the strings are, like, the web is spun. And now, and it felt like episode 5 is, okay, now let's start unraveling things, you know?
Yeah, I feel like the biggest difference between Hill House and Bly Manor, not only the fact that Bly Manor isn't as, quote-unquote, scary as Hill House. Like, I think you and I have talked about Hill House, how the scariest moment was when she just comes from the back of the car and screams, because it comes out of nowhere.
Oh, man. I remember I saw it with my mom, and both of us, like, screamed. I jumped and yelled. My mom screamed. The dogs were all barking. I'm just like, dude, this that freaked me out. Like, I was not expecting that at all.
Because it was during this, like, really good monologue, too, and it just comes in, like, midway. that you're not expecting, or like a monologue or an argument, but like the argument was an argument, so good.
You were so involved with it that it just like completely like broke like the tension that was happening between the two sisters.
Because I will say that was probably the scariest moment of Hill House.
Yeah.
But for me, at least for me, there was nothing in Bly Manor that competed with like that scare or scare in general. There's a couple like scares and a couple good like imagery,
I think.
But for me, nothing like scared me. Like, let me rephrase that. There are some like imagery moments that,
oh, yeah,
that stick with me.
Oh yeah.
But nothing that scared me in the moment, or like nothing that made me jump. Like,
oh,
that.
Dude. For me, it was the chest scene when the younger sister.
Oh yeah. I was kind of seeing that coming.
Though. I about jumped out of my skin. I was not ready for that at all.
But because I feel like with these two shows, that's what people need to know going in, is that Hill House is more of the horror, and this one is not to say Bly Manor is not a horror, but this one is definitely more of the slow burn,
right.
Leading to the payoff, where for me, I got drawn in, or like really hooked in, the last three episodes.
I agree. I think episode 8 is probably the best episode.
Eight was my favorite.
8 was definitely my favorite. 9 was a great
I'd say 7. I loved 7. I thought that one was actually really good.
Oh, yes.
It was. But 8 was probably my personal favorite. And I got reasons behind why I think that one is my favorite. Not only because it was like the most well done of the show, but also the way they did it reminded me of the movie The Innocents from 1961, mm-hmm. Which is also, it's basically what the novel was based off too, mm-hmm. and it's an adaptation. It's the same story, and The Innocents is a great movie. That's where, in Guillermo's Crimson Peak, he was very inspired by that movie, and like the look of it.
I was going to say too, is that like, I feel like Bly Manor, like the best way to compare it is like, Hill House is like The Conjuring, and Bly Manor is like Crimson Peak.
I would agree. Like agree.
They're like two completely separate types of horror, but they're still horror.
That's why I think episode 8 was my favorite, because it was the callbacks to like gothic horror,
yes.
and like German, kind of like German expressionist, but I think more like that Victorian style gothic horror, which I love.
I loved how the style and the choice to go black and white and specifically frame the shots in with darkness, not just, you know, I really like that. Not only like also using selective lights, but like stuff was not lit, but just to give you focus of where to pay attention, where to look, you know.
That episode actually had the moment that stuck with me the most, like scare wise.
Mm-hmm.
It's when she's walking down the stairs and then the back's the portrait.
Yes, dude.
That part was awesome. I had to go back and rewatch
it. I know. I remember seeing that and I was like, oh man.
I turned to Claudia and I was like, is she at Haunted Mansion at Disneyland?
Yeah. That's so funny.
Your dog's yelling at me.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, that's I would agree with that, where Bly Manor is the Crimson Peak version of the show versus like Hill House, is more of The Conjuring, or like kind of those, not, I wouldn't say like that mainstream, but it definitely has those scares and
right,
those moments.
But it's that, but I love how each, regardless of each one, Bly Manor or Hill House, it's the scares are not cheap. They're not cheap scares. They definitely earn it. So it's not like you're going into like, jump scare. You know, it's just more like you're so invested in it, and you're so, and I love how like it intertwines with the drama. So it makes it that much more potent, I guess, the scare, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what Flanagan's known for, though. He doesn't do jump scares, or if he does, like with the episode in Hill House where she comes from the back of the car, like that scare was earned, because It came out of nowhere. It wasn't like a squirrel hitting a window or like a friend tapping the shoulder in a cheesy slasher film. Yeah. Like his jump scare, I think his jump scares, because he doesn't do them, so when he does do it, they're earned. But I don't know how much more we can talk without spoiling.
Yeah, so I think Bly now Manor. Is a good time to just go full spoiler.
Yeah, we're going to go full spoilers for Bly Manor. So if you don't want to listen to it, just skip to like the last 5 minutes of this podcast, I guess.
Yeah.
Or whatever. I don't know if I'll even put a timestamp for when we stop spoilers, but hopefully by now or by the time this episode comes out,
you'd already seen Bly Manor.
You've already seen Bly Manor. It's shorter than Hill House, too.
Yeah, because
it's only 9 episodes.
Hill House was what, 12? 10?
I think it was 10.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But I feel like if Bly Manor...
Hill House had a faster pace, though. Like, each episode was like... Something was constantly happening.
Because you spent a lot of time in the past and trying to make sense of the present, you know? This time around, it's kind of the same, but it's more of the what's the curse that's living, you know?
I think sometimes Bly Manor gets a little slow because there's too much jumping. Or, like, not, like, too much jumping, but in a sense where... I think of episode 4, I believe, where you're trying to figure out what's going on because it's constantly going from thing like scene to scene to scene. But it's like it's the same scene over and over, just slightly different. And you're trying to piece everything together, trying to figure out what's going on.
Yes. Yeah. I think the one I can't. Oh, my gosh. What's her name? Hannah. The episode 5. That was I loved that episode. That was the best episode because. Like, you had no idea what was going on. Because they already made mention to, like, dementia and Alzheimer's. And then even her memories are like, no, you've been here before. Like, you know, that type of thing. I loved that. Oh, no. So I was just like, does she have like an early onset of dementia or something? Because she was like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm not here, you know, or whatever. Or I'm elsewhere. And I'm just like, oh, this poor lady, you know, she's probably like, you know, but like, I felt like halfway through episode 5, I was like, oh my gosh, I think she's dead. And then sure enough at the end, but the way they do it is so heartbreaking. I loved it. I think they did a great job executing that.
I think I started piecing it together because I think at one point she like tries cracking her neck, but the sound they use is so like... loud, like right, it is right. Like the neck breaking.
That was another clue. Yeah,
she's constantly jumping from her memories, and like the memories are slightly changing because it's something that already happened, but like I think it's with Owen the cook, and he's like,
that's his name, Owen. Yeah.
He keeps like telling her like, oh, we've done this before, like we're doing it again,
right? I think that I really like that part. I like how almost interactive her memories are, you know, in that sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's how everybody's is, because that happens with the previous au pair. What was it, Rebecca? What was that her name?
Yes.
It happens with her, and I believe it happens with Peter?
It does. Oh, yeah, with his mom. That's right.
That was the only part that kind of confused me, or like it seemed like it came out of somewhere.
Left field. Yeah.
Yeah, because I was like, what does this have to do with anything? And then she says the line that she doesn't even know her son's dead. Like, because he, in the show, there's the heiress to Bly Manor, Victoria? Or Violet?
Yes.
Violet or
I think it's Violet. Uh-huh.
And she's the heiress to Bly Manor, and her whole backstory is in episode 8, which was my favorite episode.
Yeah.
Where she basically it gets like some sort of the plague. It's not the plague, but it's like a disease where she doesn't have much time left, but then she kind of beats the odds and survives for years with it.
Yeah.
But they essentially lock her away so she can't have any contact with her husband or her daughter. And her sister is like taking care of her, but it gets to the point where her sister is sick of it, does not want to take care of her anymore.
Uh-huh.
So they describe it in the show as a mercy kill, but the word they use instead of mercy is enough.
Right.
Because the sister is just fed up with it.
Right.
So she gets murdered, and I think they bury her, right? They bury her.
Yeah, they did.
And she said to keep all her clothes to give to the daughter when she's old enough and lock it away in a chest.
And her jewels and everything, yeah.
That's, like, worth a fortune. And the sister ends up getting married to her husband, or the heiress's husband.
Right.
And he's trying to keep, like, he's trying to make money so they can save the house because they're running low on finances. But she wants to sell her sister's dresses and jewels, and the husband's, like, not having it. So then she ends up stealing the keys and trying to go and sell the jewels, and it gets to the scare that you were talking about, because when she opens the drawer and lifts up a dress, two arms come out of the dress and choke her sister out.
Yeah.
But I love the way they explained it, like, her in the chest, just waking up every day, waiting for the daughter to open the chest so she can give her the dresses.
Right.
And then she finds out it's her sister, and then so she chokes her out. Mm-hmm. The face her sister had when the husband found her was terrifying.
I know. I think that's what made it scary, too, was the face that she had when the husband found her. I was just like, oh, my God.
It's the face she had, and then before that, when she's going to get the chest, she's walking down the banister, and oh, there we are. Can you hear me? Sorry, guys. We're having some issues with Skype and internet connection. But the part I was talking about, that the part that stuck with me was she's walking down the stairs to the chest, and in the background is their two painted portraits. And they pan up real quick to the sister's portrait, and there's like this demonic face over the deceased sister's face. And then she walks by, doesn't notice, and then she looks back and the face is normal. But the way, like, the face was, because it wasn't in focus and it wasn't, like, in your face. I don't think they were trying to get you to... They were trying to get you to notice it, but it wasn't too, like, noticeable. I had to go back and, like, rewatch it, but that face was terrifying. But...
Yeah.
Anyways, continuing on. So, after the second sister dies, the husband throws the chest in the lake or the pond outside of Bly Manor because he thinks it's cursed.
Right.
Which breaks the first wife's heart when she's as she's a ghost, because she constantly is roaming the, like, around Bly Manor now.
Yeah.
And she just does her path. That, and they explain the whole season they're wondering why there's these muddy footprints, and they just go in and go out. And it explains that she goes back to the bedroom where her daughter and husband slept, and then we'll walk back into the pond. And anyone that gets in her way, she kills. It's literally like anybody that just gets in her way, she'll just grab their neck and choke them out and then drag them into the pond with her.
Yeah.
Which then, episode 8 was where they explain a lot of the ghosts that have been around Bly Manor. Because I was always wondering, I was like, why is there a plague doctor here? Why is there, like, this priest
that
here?
That plague doctor got me. I think that was the first episode that he was there. And I was just like, what the heck is that? It's like, what is that, you know?
Yeah, he's just walking around in the background.
Yeah, and then with the little kid.
There's another part. I don't know if it's Yeah, the kid.
Yeah. The kid with no face, and then when they were playing hide and seek, and then the other sister, when you go to find out in episode 8, that is the other sister. She's over there. She's, like, crying and wailing in the corner, and the little girl just, like, shushes her, and I'm just like, how is that normal to you? I was like, what is that?
I forgot about the sister crying in the beginning and her saying shush. And then when Peter, like, brings her up at the in the one episode, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, yeah. But it gets to the point where they explain why everybody has no faces is because they're Violet's memories. And because she can't remember many of the details, or, like, even what she looks like, her face starts just wearing away. To the point where everybody else that she killed are becoming just distant memories that their faces are also melting away as well. The kid got me because she walks in and there's a kid sleeping in that bed and she thinks it's her kid, so she just takes him into the pond with him. She doesn't kill him, or, like, yeah, she does, but she's just walking in the pond with this kid. But I don't know, that like episode 7 and 8, especially 8, were like what really got me and like really was like, all right, I'm back in. Because I was, the whole show I was kind of teetering on. I'm like, eh, this is all right. Like, I'm going to finish it. But like, I wasn't as excited with Hill House. Like, I saw all these, like, everything they were building up to, but it was kind of, like I said, it was like, all right, yeah, when are we going to get to this point?
I don't know. I think if we were to watch it again, knowing the end result, I think we would like it better.
I think so too.
Because I think going into it, we're like, oh, okay, it's going to be another Hill House. And they market it as, oh, it's another Hill House, but it's not. And I think that's where people are maybe a little bit misled, is because they're thinking, oh, okay, it's going to be another Hill House, when it's nothing like that. It's more like a Crimson Peak. Or, yeah, you do get some creepiness. You do get some, like, some scares. But it's mainly a story of, like, betrayal and, you know, revenge.
I would agree. I feel like on a second viewing it'll be a lot better, because that's how exactly I was with Crimson Peak, because the way they marketed that movie was like this straight up horror movie from Guillermo, but then you go into it and it's a gothic romance. I was gonna say, even in this, they say it's not a ghost story at the end, they say it's a love story, so it's like, it's sort of a gothic romance tale.
Right, but I think with, because going into Crimson Peak when I first saw it, I think there was like one reviewer I saw, they're like, yeah, they marketed it as a horror movie, it's more of like a gothic romance, so don't expect it to be like the straight up horror movie, it's more than that, and I was like, oh, okay, so I already knew what to expect. And same with this one, early reviews started coming out, and I saw on Twitter someone was like, they're like, it's not like Hill House, it's a gothic romance. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, hearing that, I'm like, okay, I know what to expect. And so, but even then, watching it through, I was like, okay, I see what's going on. I see the pieces that are laid or set up, but I don't see where this is going. And then it happens. And I think that's in episode 4 is where you really start to see, okay, this is where things are happening, you know? Then things are starting to get a little bit clearer in 4, really clear in 5, and then 6 through 9, it's just clear as day, you know?
Agreed, yeah. Yeah, I feel like I need to watch this series again to really, like, fully appreciate it.
Yeah.
Especially knowing, like, the full story now. But I'm not saying I disliked it. I just said, like, it was maybe my expectations, I guess, going into it. Because I was trying to stay away from reviews and everything before going into it. I just wanted to go as soon as it came on.
Well,
did you know,
go ahead.
This has nothing to do with reviews or anything, but did you know the fiance in Bly Manor is Greg Sestero from The Room?
Yes. As soon as I saw him there, I was like, hey, it's Greg Sestero.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Oh, hi, Mark.
I was like, what the fuck are you doing here? He, like, barely is in the show, though, or, like, has it barely anything to do.
Yeah, all he did was just, like, sit there in the beginning and the end.
It's just a nice cameo.
Yeah. For those who know who he is.
That's true.
Man, I think overall, I think I really, really liked it.
I would agree.
Yeah. I think I really, really liked it. I think it was really, really well done. Especially the ending shot of
the ending shot
of her hand on her shoulder. Oh man, I was just, that gave you like chills.
That shot a lot. That closing shot I think was another thing that did it for me. Where I'm like, awesome, like that's a great way to end it.
Yeah.
The ending, because for me, I was like, the way they wrapped up, like, the conflict from episode 8 to 9, I was like, damn, that's quick. We still have 40 minutes left of this episode.
No, same. That's exactly what I was thinking, and I was just like, okay, the end? Or I was like, what's left to talk about, or what's left to go on about?
But I did like what they were doing after, yeah.
Yeah, but once they left the manor, that's why I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, you know? That's like, so it's like we're seeing her slowly descent into madness, you know? And
which was like, that was, it was nice seeing like her and Jamie together, but it was like, you, us as the audience are like, something's gonna happen like eventually.
Dude, it was so, as soon as she saw the reflection on the door, I was like, oh, it's over. I was like, dude, you're done. You're gone, you know?
What did you think of every time her former fiance showed up as the ghost? Because all I kept thinking about was Elijah Wood from Sin City.
I didn't think of that until right now. But, yeah, no, I totally see it now. I really liked it. I really liked it a lot because that was the guilt. And that was the memory that she had. Because the ghosts in this story, the ghosts were memories. The ghosts were regret, memories of regret and memories of, you know, pain, a lot of pain, because you see the memory or the ghost of himself with the uncle. You see the ghost of his mother, of Peter's mother. You see the ghost of Hannah and her just trying to stay normal, I guess you can say, and dealing with the reality of things, because that's her pain, is the reality of that she's dead. And then, oh my gosh, Miss, what's the babysitter's name before?
Oh, Rebecca.
Thank you. Right? Yeah. Yeah, I think it is. Rebecca's pain was dealing with the fact that Peter left her. And so it's like all the ghosts and all the memories are of pain and how it affects each character differently and what is their specific pain, you know?
I liked in the show whenever like a character would die, it like shows them like just like a little bit off to the side, like reacting to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like the one that got me was Rebecca when her body's just floating in the pond and she's like on the shore screaming.
Yeah, that was...
Because he left her to die, right? Like,
mm-hmm. And I was so selfish, too, because I was like, because he was like, oh, I'm tired of being alone. And I'm like, you idiot. And I was like, what? And I don't know. Like Loki, even Rebecca, too. And, oh, no, they even say it in the... Hannah says it. It's just like the rat in the trap, where it's like, I wonder how long it will take for her to realize that she's in a trap. And then that episode happens, and I'm just like, wow. Like, that was really good.
Yeah, I was like, I didn't really like Peter and Rebecca together. It was always weird, and I was just like, what are you doing? Like, why are you with him?
Uh-huh.
He's just rude to you.
Yeah, I agree that it's just like, that was a, like, ideally, they were a bad match, but isn't that, like, how people see them? Because she was so invisible that when someone finally gave her attention, she just attached herself to him. And then for him, she was someone who took away the pain. And he needed that from her in death and in life. So it really spoke to their character. They needed each other, but for the wrong reasons. So I really, really liked that aspect. Like, I understand the story of it. Do I like the pairing? No, but I understand the story of it, you know?
Agree. Yeah, agreed. Yeah, that was like, there were so many good moments in the show, though, too. Well, it's not even like a ghost, but the uncle, he had like his double, like, the demon, his
that.
Own demon.
I love that. Love that. Love that. When his brother was like, when you finally see that your true self and everything, and when he gets the call that his brother died, and then he sees his like his true self and who he really is. I was like, man, I was like that really hit hard, because you're like, dang, that's in reality, that's a piece of everyone that people don't want to like acknowledge, you know? So I really liked that. I thought that was really, really well done.
There's like, yeah, like I said, there's so many good moments in this show. For people who haven't seen it, well, I don't know why they're listening at this point. Yeah. You said the whole show, but go into it knowing it's a slow burn versus Hill House, which is much quicker in its pace. There are things that happen in Bly Manor, but again, compared to Hill House, where Hill House, like, it just seems like something's happening every moment. Or it seems like a lot of the setup in Hill House is answered quickly or, like, quicker. Like, they'll set something up and maybe, like, two episodes later they'll explain it.
Right.
This one doesn't really get explained till the end.
And I feel like, if you essentially look at it, both shows are dealing with family. Like, in Bly Manor, it's the family you choose. And in, Hill House, it's the family you're born with, you know?
Agreed, yeah. They're both, again, they're both, like, family dramas, too.
Yeah.
Just different families and different...
situations.
Yeah. I am excited to see what they would do for a third season or what they would want to adapt.
Yeah.
Because I am invested in, like, in this series, and I hope it keeps going for a little bit.
Yeah, because I don't mind. I'm like, dude, just keep bringing it on. Like, yeah, we got the gothic horror, and I really like that, but, okay, let's get back to something a little bit spooky, you know?
Mm-hmm. I don't know where they could go from this, because if they're going to do a haunting series, like American Horror Story, again, I don't think it's scary, but they have the luxury of being, like, American Horror Story. We'll change it up every season. Asylum, Coven, like, there's so many options.
Right.
I think they did a slasher one, right? 1984?
I think so, yeah.
So it's like they have all these horror options, but haunting is restricting itself to supernatural, like, paranormal style. They're not going to have the haunting of blank and blank and then a slasher, like, is killing everybody. They could, but then they'd have to add a ghost in, like, at some point.
It could also be some, like, almost like Nightmare on Elm Street, if you really think about it, because... Yeah, Nightmare on Elm Street's a slasher, but it's ultimately a ghost that's haunting, you know, the kids for the parents' decisions, you know?
Was the original one, I don't think it was in the original one where they said Freddy was a pedophile, right? Or was it, I know it's the remake, I think, where they turned him into one.
I think it was the remake.
Because the remake, they're like, we have to explain who Freddy was. He was this pedophile, so the parents burned him.
Yeah,
he was a pedophile. And everyone was like, you turned our horror icon into a pedophile?
Yeah. I think it was the new one. But I really don't remember the new one too much, to be honest with you.
Neither do I. I'm about to...
Because I remember seeing it, but I just don't remember, like, the movie.
It was just... I think it was just... People were like, why? It was the same thing, I think, too, with the Friday the 13th remake in 2009. People were like, why are you? I don't know. I got all of them. The Scream Factory box that came out finally. So I have all the Friday the 13ths to watch.
Yeah.
No, I just have Jason Goes to Hell, Jason X, and the reboot. Yeah.
I wish it came with
Freddy versus Jason too.
I've seen a few of them, like when they're on like AMC, like during Halloween time or whatever. But, like, I don't, like, they're not like, I have to watch it. They're just like, if they're on, you know?
I remember watching, I think, last year, 1 through 8.
Oh, my gosh.
I rewatched 1, because that's the only one I'd seen.
Uh-huh.
It is one of the weirdest franchises, because the first one, it's Jason's mom, and then 2, it's him, or 2 through 4, it's him.
Yeah.
And then they kill him. 5, Jason's not even in it. It's somebody pretending to be him.
Right.
6, he comes back to life, and that's my favorite one because it's so goofy. And
which one's that one?
Jason Lives, I think. The 6th one.
Oh, okay.
It's where he comes back to life, and like they know how corny it is, so they even make it like super campy and just goofy, which is why I like it. Then 7, they bring in like... What's that person called who can like not read people's minds, but they
like a seance? Not seance. They're not the mind reader. Palm, whatever.
Something like that, where they're whatever, like
medium or something like that.
They have like telekinesis or whatever, something like that.
Yeah.
And they bring in like supernatural element with Jason. It's like not a ghost story either, but
yeah,
he's still slashing people up, but then this girl is like, I can see what Jason's doing. And it's super weird. Then the eighth one, he goes to New York.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one. That Jason, one I do remember.
Jason Takes Manhattan, I think.
Yeah.
It's so goofy. And so, and then Jason X, he's going to be in space.
Yeah.
I don't know. That franchise was...
Yeah, it maybe just because it's so goofy, that's why I'm just like, eh. Like, I'll take it or leave it.
But I mean, like, Halloween did the same thing.
A little bit. I don't know. I feel like Halloween is a little bit more grounded. A little bit.
Well, because they initially only wanted to do Halloween, and then I think they made Carpenter do a second one.
Yeah.
Even though
he didn't direct that one, did he? No, I think he just wrote it and was like, here you guys go.
There's stories that he technically... It's kind of one of those things where, like, they brought a director on, but really, like, who was directing?
Right.
People were saying Carpenter did it because he had a lot of input because he wrote it and produced it, I believe.
Uh-huh.
And then that was supposed to be the end of Michael's story. Then they were going to do, like, an anthology series where every Halloween was a different Halloween-esque story. So the third one, Michael's not in it. It's a completely different
Right. That's the season of the witch one.
Yeah, and then it didn't do good, so they're like, we're bringing Michael back in the fourth one. And then 4 through 6, I think, are their own story.
Yeah.
And then they reboot it with, what is it, H20?
H2O, yeah.
Yeah, and then bring Jamie Lee Curtis back, and that's a sequel to Halloween 1, not Halloween 2, just Halloween 1. And then they do Halloween Resurrection.
Yeah.
With Busta Rhymes, yeah. And that one is trash.
That one's garbage. I remember seeing that one, and I was just like, what is this?
It's the... People give Rob Zombie's Halloween shit. No, Resurrection is the worst Halloween.
I saw the Rob Zombie's Halloween. It's okay. I mean, not a
fan. They're not bad. I'm not a fan,
but, I mean, it's all right.
it's better than Resurrection.
It's watchable, I guess, but...
I would much rather sit through Rob Zombie's Halloweens than probably Resurrection, H2O, and some of the other Halloween films.
I don't know. I like H2O. H2O is pretty fun. It's watchable.
Is that with that's with LL Cool J, right?
Yeah, that one's LL Cool J.
Oh, that's the one where he goes to Hollywood, isn't it? Right? They're like shooting something in Hollywood with Jamie Lee Curtis. I don't know. That one's weird too.
I think so. I haven't seen it in a bit.
And then
I think
they rebooted it again in 2018 as a direct sequel to the second one, or the first one, sorry.
Right. But I don't know. I really like that one. The
I like that one. It's just like the Halloween, I don't think, went as crazy as Friday the 13th because they just constantly are rebooting it and trying to be like, all right, the sequel takes place in this universe.
Right.
This is almost
like
thing.
It's almost like the Terminator series. It's like, no. It's in this timeline. With this going on before Judgment Day, it's like, oh, okay, gotcha.
You know what? I gotta respect Friday the 13th being like, this all takes place in the same universe. Like, all this shit happened.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, I don't know. And then I think Nightmare on Elm Street's the same way. Everything happens.
Nightmare on Elm Street, I fell off after Dream Wars. I'm not too familiar with that one. With that
I liked, it's technically not a, not Nightmare on Elm Street, but it's called Wes Craven's New Nightmare. It's essentially Freddy, or like his original vision of Freddy is attacking the people who made the first Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
So I like that one. That one's pretty clever.
I heard of that one. I've seen the trailer. I've not seen it. I've wanted to see it though.
It's pretty good. It's super meta, and I think he did it right before Scream. So he was like getting into that style of Scream. Meta.
Yeah.
But what I don't remember who wrote it or if I think he wrote it. There's a Nightmare on Elm Street movie where the writer of that film did the script for a Carpenter film, and I guess it's the same exact kind of storyline.
Yeah.
I just don't remember which Nightmare on Elm Street. I'll look it up later. I don't want to look it up now. do we have anything more to talk about with Bly Manor or
I think not. I think that's... I mean, we pretty much said everything we wanted to say, Bly Manor.
Uh-huh.
I think it's really good, but I think going in knowing that it is a love story, it is a gothic horror, because there are horror elements and scares in the show, that I think it would, like, set people up more to be impressed and to enjoy it more rather than to be disappointed with like, oh yeah, it's a horror show. You know?
Oh, there was something I did want to bring up. I think a reason I didn't get as hooked with Bly Manor versus Hill House.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not saying that Bly Manor is bad. I think Bly Manor is good, just not as good as Hill House.
Yeah.
Is Flanagan only directed and wrote one episode versus Hill House, where he did that. He directed all of them.
Yeah. I think that I agree is because you can tell when he was directing the first episode, you can tell it was him and everything was him. After the first episode, you can tell other people were directing it, and not saying it was bad, not at all. Yeah. And you can tell it was a different tone. Not saying it's bad, but you can tell it's different direction, or you can tell the different directors.
That was something I noticed. I think I was reading right before we started recording. I like the score of both Hill House and Bly Manor, but I think I was just reading that they reused some music from Hill House and Bly Manor.
They did. I noticed it. I heard it. Yeah.
So I was like, oh, this is good. Like, I've heard it before. Or, like, I didn't think I heard it before, but I was like, it sounds vaguely familiar, but it was the...
Yeah, it's that little, like, piano refrain type of thing.
Which is good. I'm not saying it's bad.
No. I think the music also helps it kind of all come together, you know?
Mm-hmm. I would agree. But, again, I think this series, like, the Haunting series, is much better than what American Horror Story tried being. I think at least the Haunting series is more consistent than American Horror Story. American Horror Story just tries to do all these different ideas. I think what also turned me off was an asylum. At one point, it becomes like an alien story. It was like halfway through the season, they switched it up. Like, you're on board for the first half of the season, and then they're like, aliens are involved.
Aliens.
And then they did something else. I get annoyed, too, with Horror Story, because... In Freak Show, it takes place in the 50s.
Uh-huh.
And they cover a Nirvana song.
Oh, my god.
She sings a Nirvana song. And I took a course at film school where it was music for cinema.
Yeah.
And something they taught us in that, and I agreed with, was if you do a movie, or like if you do a movie based in a certain time period, or like a movie in the past... You can't use music from the future.
Right.
So, like, if you're doing a movie in the 60s, do not put a Kanye West song
movie. Unless you're Baz Luhrmann with Gatsby.
That's because Jay-Z produced it.
Oh, yeah. Even then, complete side note, but, like, even then, it worked for that movie.
At least because there's a Lana Del Rey song in there. They use it a lot in that movie. But her style fits that time period.
Right.
So I'll give that one a little bit of a pass, but
yeah, like that one, I think they figured out a way where it can work, that it worked with that movie. But in general, that's something
They gave us exercises to do where like they would give us a scene, or he would give us a scene and take all the music or like anything out of it. And he'd be like, all right, here is the footage. So like the one I really enjoyed doing was with my group. We got a scene from No Country for Old Men. It's the one where he is being chased by Javier Bardem, or he's in the hotel room and he starts getting shot at.
Yeah.
They were like, all right, how would you lay the music and like the score in here? And I remember another thing they taught us is some of the best composers know when not to put music in. So that was like the challenge, because some people just put music in the whole like way through. So it didn't work?
Yeah, because a lot of times the silence is just as important as the actual music itself.
And then I remember what we did was we did the music and then we like made it silent. And then at one point he runs through the hotel. And I remember an idea. I was like, oh, what if like the dude in the back was listening to a radio and they're in Texas? So I was like, oh, well, like everybody knows Johnny Cash.
Right.
So like let's put like Ring of Fire, because they're like on the Texas-Mexico border. So Ring of Fire has got that like Hispanic flair, but it's also Texas country.
Yeah.
And we put a filter on it to make it sound like a radio, so as he's like walking through it gets louder, and then as he leaves like it gets quieter as the door shuts.
That's awesome.
And then I remember the teacher questioned me. He's like, why'd you do Johnny Cash? He's not from Texas. And I was just like, well, everybody knows, like, if you see, like, an image from, like, Texas or the South, like, people know Johnny Cash. Like, he was, because I think he said another country artist that was from Texas. But I was saying, like, people know him more. And since it's on the Texas-Mexico border, I felt the song worked more.
Right.
So, I had my reasons. don't question come at me. Don't come at me. But that's what I always look for with, like, movies or TV shows is the music too.
Yeah.
I notice it.
Oh, in that case, going back to Ratchet, they do that sometimes where the music is like, what? You know? Like, so, like some of the music, I think there was maybe one or two choices I was like, all right. But majority of the times it was in period and on point, but there was maybe like one or two and I was like, okay, whatever.
Well, I think there was something in Asylum where they did this whole dance number to a modern song. I don't know. Because, again, going back to that, one of the projects we had for music for that class was pick, like, a composer you really like and, like, reasons why you like their work. So I did Ramin Djawadi, who did the music for Westworld.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I did the music for season one of Westworld. Because I think our teacher hated Djawadi and was like, he just covers songs and doesn't do his own music. But like the research I had to do for that project was, since it's not really a Western, you can put any song you want in the old time piano and it works because they're in the modern world, even like the future. So these songs do exist. Like, yes, he's changing it for the time period, but in one of the behind the scenes I watched, he was talking about how the player piano is technically the first robot because it's playing music on its own and it's like moving on its own. So it's technically the first robot. And he was saying, I think it was him or Jonathan Nolan were saying that the robots from Westworld can connect with the piano because it's exactly like them. And, like, in the world, that's the only thing they can connect with is the music.
Yeah.
Which I thought was cool. And I was comparing it because they did the song Exit Music for a Film by Radiohead. That's how the first season ends.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, if you take the lyrics of this song and, like, put it in the context of the show, it worked perfectly, especially because it is the end of the episode, end of the season.
Right.
It's like it's like the robots in Westworld are leaving the film and going into the real world.
Right.
The first season's great of Westworld.
I need to rewatch it because I tried watching the first episodes, first season, and I got up to episode 5 and I'm like, I'm bailing because it just felt like boring and we're just like in one spot like the whole time.
First season's great. Second season's all right. I need to watch the third season. But I like the first season a lot of Westworld.
Yeah. Maybe I just need to give it another shot.
Do it. Do it.
Just do it.
But I think that's going to wrap it up. I think we've said all we have to say about Bly Manor and Hill House.
Yeah.
Unless you got anything else.
No, I think that's pretty much it.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for today's episode. Let's just remind everybody where they can find you, Arsenio, if they hadn't heard it the first 4 times.
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at A3_reviews. Do movie reviews and working on an audio dramas and figuring it out. So, yeah, just keep an eye on it. I think right now I have my first audio drama on SoundCloud, and I still need to figure that out because I don't even use SoundCloud that often. So it's just... It's kind of just there, but I need to figure it out so where it's more accessible. But yeah,
are you gonna do a review on Bly Manor on your YouTube channel?
I am. Yes, that one should be coming out. I should have it done by Thursday. Should be done by Thursday.
So your review will be out before this episode because I'm dropping this on the 16th. We're recording this on the 13th for everybody listening.
Yeah, but we're recording this on Tuesday.
On Tuesday, it'll be out today because you're listening to it right now. I've been liking my schedule for the podcast. I announced it over on Movie Chatter. They had my little, they gave me a little promo shout out.
Nice.
Over there. But I kind of formally announced on there that I'm going to do an episode every 2 weeks since I'm getting into a set schedule where I can probably schedule out a podcast. Like today we're recording on the 13th, so I can have this ready for, the 16th since I had an episode 2 weeks ago. A lot of time jumping right now, but
just like Bly Manor.
What? I'm just trying to get it to where like I pick out my days and try to see if it works with a guest. And then, that gives me plenty of time to just have it ready. Like the episode I did with Haley, that was ready for like over a week and it was just sitting there waiting.
That's awesome.
So I'm much rather have that than trying to rush out an episode or, the episodes I was doing at the beginning of this year where I would just put it out once I did it because I needed it.
Yeah.
I'm getting to the point where I'm going to do every other Friday, every 2 weeks. So today's the 16th. The next episode will be the 30th. And like I said, as of right now, when I'm recording this, I'm actually working out some details to get a, an extra episode out on the 23rd, but I don't want to disclose what that is.
Okay. I was going to like try to like tee you up with that one, but I was like, he hasn't said anything. So I don't know if you want to talk about that yet, but yeah.
No. I'm finalizing final minute details with that, but be on the lookout for that one. That is probably going to be a very big episode.
Yeah, I'm really excited. When you told me like the possibility, I was like, dude, that's so cool. I'm really excited for you.
I'm excited for it. But yeah, other than that, every episode will be out every 2 weeks. So the next episode, I guess, will be the 23rd, and then the 30th I'll have one, but then probably won't be an episode until the November 13th, Friday the 13th. I could do a whole episode on that series.
Oh my gosh.
It won't even be October anymore, but fuck it. I'll do it. I'll talk about the whole Friday the 13th franchise.
It'll just be like, it's like Tim and his Friday the 13th collection.
That's a beautiful box. The packaging is so cool.
Yeah.
So, because they announced
it. It looks, and I look at it, I saw it online, and I'm just like, I wish I was more of a fan to justify just like purchasing it, you know?
So it's crazy because they announced that back in July before my birthday.
Yeah.
So I texted my parents. I was like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, birthday present, this. I was like, I don't care that it's coming out in October. Like, I'll wait.
Yeah.
But it's awesome.
It's all, that's don't mind me.
So before this box that came out, they had another one where it was all of them. But because of, I think, licensing issues, Jason Goes to Hell and Jason X weren't included in any collection after that. And then that box set got discontinued, so it was out of print.
Oh, wow.
So that box set was going for like $350, $400 because of how rare it was. And then they released a new one that's like $20. That's the one I have where it's just 1 through 8.
Yeah.
So I had that one. So I'd only seen those. And then Scream Factory announced they got the rights to all of them.
That's
and
awesome.
Re-released it as this whole big box set, new artwork, new bonus features, they even said there's new cuts of the film or like scenes that weren't included ever.
Yeah.
That they were able to like dig up and like rescan it to have like that HD quality.
Right.
So they did that, released it as a box set. If you were the first 1,313 people, because 1,313,
yeah,
you would get the posters that come with it.
Oh, that's awesome.
But because of how much of a demand there was, they upped it to like 7,000 people because so many people were wanting it. And luckily I got mine ordered in time. So I got the poster, which one of them is the box art of the box set as a poster, which I'm probably going to hang up in the studio. And then another one, the other poster is the 40th anniversary of the first film. And it's Jason coming out of the water when he pulls the girl down in the canoe.
Oh, that's cool.
And then in the background on the shore is his mom standing. And then spread out across the poster is all the deaths of the counselors, like how they died in the film, like spread out on the poster.
That's cool.
They're awesome posters, but that's an awesome box set from Scream Factory. But I could talk about that on November 13th. But yes, we're going to wrap up the show now. We'll wrap it up. Follow the show on Instagram and Facebook at Lighting Up the Marquee Podcast. Subscribe to us anywhere you listen to podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher. I need more subscribers on Apple Podcast. I was like noticing, I don't know if I can see how many, but also go rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts. It'll help promote it over there. Spread it around. Tell your friends to go listen to this show. It's pretty neat.
Yeah. It's a pretty neat show.
It's pretty neat. But yeah, I will see you all. Actually, I won't see you all. What the fuck am I talking about? you will all be listening to this show next week on the 23rd, and then I will also be back on the 30th. But until then, I'm your host, Tim Martin. This has been Lighting Up the Marquee.